Happy Father's Day, Pitcherless family, and welcome to Hacks and Jacks. My name is Brett Ford. I am here with Scott Chu, and fun fact, we're both twin dads, so happy twin dad Father's Day to you, Scott. Do you have an exciting day with the family today?
I had a non-exciting day. That's usually what I ask for Father's Day. I wanted to be chill. And it's like we're twins because we're twin dads. That makes us. Yeah. I'm also a twin. So there's just twins everywhere. But yeah, no, it's a good day. My birthday is exactly a week from now. So it's always like right next to Father's Day. So I just combine the two gifts and ask for like a whole day to be left alone.
That's awesome. Yeah. I got my, my dad time yesterday. Got to go play some cards, had some fun, did well. So, and then today we, you know, spent the day as a family. We had a T-ball game this morning. We had, we went up to, our lake cottage and spent some time at our family lake cottage. Just a good day overall. So, can't complain one bit, and we've got plenty of baseball to talk about as well. So let's dive right into that with some news and notes. So big news out of Boston, Rafael Devers is headed across the country. Boston shipped him all the way to the NL West, where he'll don a San Francisco Giants jersey. I guess there was some rumblings within from, you know, Devers and the front office butting heads, and he didn't want to play first base. So they jettisoned him across the country. What does this mean for fantasy managers as far as, you know, the impact of Devers' value moving from Fenway to Oracle?
Yeah. So let's start with, you know, the park factors. That's usually the easiest place to go first. Oracle Park is one of the toughest places for lefties to hit in the major leagues, while Fenway Park, generally speaking, from an overall run factor, is one of the best places for left-handers to hit. However, home runs specifically, both below average in home runs for left-handed hitters. And weirdly enough, Rafael Devers hits the ball. He hits home runs to all fields. He's not one of these like extreme pull hitting guys. And actually, if he had played if he had played all of his games in Boston versus San Francisco, he would have basically the exact same number of home runs, right? In fact, Fenway Park is one of the worst parks in the league for him in terms of where his home runs land, right? So he's got, over his career, if every single one of his games had been played in Boston, he'd have 202 home runs, well below the average for him across different parks. He'd have 200 in San Francisco. For reference, he'd have 273 in Great American Ballpark. He'd have 242 at Citi Field for the Mets. He'd have 243 over in Anaheim. He'd have 225 in the Trop. Basically, everywhere is better for him except basically where he is. I'm not expecting the home run numbers to change a lot. Maybe like the overall OPS drops just a little bit because, you know, he hits the ball to all fields, and so he doesn't have like a wall to knock it off of like he had in his weird home ballpark at Fenway. But generally speaking, I'm not expecting a real dip in the overall power numbers. In fact, if he had played all of his games at Oracle this year, he'd have 15 home runs. If he'd played them all in Boston, he'd have 13. He currently has 14. So I don't think there's a huge change there for Devers in terms of home ballpark. He'll get a couple more games in Coors, which is always nice. I haven't calculated it for this year. I don't remember how many more times the Giants are going to go to Coors, but you know, they're a division team now. It's always a little bit different getting different looks. You know, he'll have to face some different pitching, but not necessarily tougher pitching. The AL East pitches quite well. The NL West pitches quite well. So, well, actually, overall, they don't pitch super well, but they have good pitchers there. So that's all kind of a wash too. Really, the biggest difference, I wish I could say like even the lineup is all that different, but frankly, both teams are pretty top heavy in their lineup, with the Red Sox having a lot of young guys who are, you know, at best inconsistent, right? They don't have besides him, really, there wasn't a ton of star power. Their best hitter this season, other than him, has been Jarren Duran, who's not really a power guy. And then like Trevor Story or Zidane Rafaela. Like there's just not a lot of firepower in Boston for run scoring. So I guess he technically gets a slight boost offensively going to the Giants in terms of team context. But overall, this is largely a wash. Devers is going to continue to DH in San Francisco. He may get some opportunities at first base. He may get short-term opportunities at third base until Matt Chapman returns. But again, like his old team, Matt Chapman is a plus-plus defender at third base. So there's not going to be a lot of appetite for Devers to play third base for the Giants once Matt Chapman is back. You know, at first base, right now they've got the lefty Dom Smith who's hitting well. That's likely to stop at some point, and that might, you know, if Devers wanted to play first base, he probably would have done it in Boston, right? So it doesn't really change anything overall. This is a lot of talking to tell you that this doesn't really change anything for Rafael Devers himself. He goes to a similar offense in a park that he would have similar production in. The guy who's actually impacted the most by this is probably early season standout Wilmer Flores. So Wilmer Flores has been the primary DH for the Giants so far this season, and that basically knocks him out of a spot. He is probably now going to platoon with Dom Smith at first base. Flores, not a great defender at any position, but he's adequate at first base. So he'll probably platoon with Dom Smith, may get more time as Dom Smith inevitably fades off. I mean, maybe Dom Smith won't, but in his history, that's generally what happened. He's had these 1 or 2 months where he's been, you know, good, but then he kind of just fades back into fantasy obscurity. So Flores short term loses a lot of playing time, probably droppable in most, you know, in most 10 to 12 teamers because, well, he wasn't that, you know, he's been very good, but long-term prognosis in those leagues wasn't going to be all that good anyway. So Wilmer Flores, the big loser. Devers doesn't really, I mean, and again, it's also not actionable, right? Like what are you going to do? What were you going to trade him? What were you going to do with Devers? You weren't going to do a darn thing. So you're going to keep doing not a darn thing. You're going to keep plugging him in your lineup and you're going to keep getting pretty good numbers that we expected to improve whether he stayed in Boston or not. So yeah, there's a lot of mental things that can happen here and guys can be a little different, but frankly, Rafael Devers going to be Rafael Devers just on the other side of the country, playing games a little later at night for most of us.
I think if there's one winner of this trade, I think it might be Marcelo Mayer. You know, with Bregman potentially coming back relatively soon, the writing on the wall kind of spelled out Mayer headed back down to AAA. But now with so many at-bats vacated, he's probably going to stick in the major leagues for the rest of the season, even after Bregman comes back.
Yeah, I think for him in general, it's good from a fantasy perspective. I think he's still a little bit time boxed right now with, you know, Bregman coming back. That probably Marcelo Mayer is then going to have to fight for more playing time. He'll need maybe Trevor Story gets cold and hurt again. Like at least one of those things is going to happen in the next month or so because he's Trevor Story and that's just kind of what he is now. But he's going to have more precarious playing time, Marcelo Mayer. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, he's a short. He's a winner in terms of career development because I do think you're right. He would have gone back down because there would have been nowhere for him to play until Story got hurt. And now he'll be able to sort of just like sort of bounce around random positions until something happens instead of waiting to do that in the minors. But for fantasy purposes, especially in 10 to 12 teamers, it's the same outcome, right? It's a guy who you can't really use that much after Bregman comes back.
I'm just kind of looking at the context of this trade, I know we're not, you know, front office guys or really here to debate front office moves as much as we are fantasy, but it just seems so strange to trade away a superstar when you're 37 and 36 and not really get anything major league relevant back. I mean, Jordan Hicks is okay. Kyle Harrison is interesting.
If we're going to play the speculation game, there's only one thing to speculate, and it's that the Red Sox really wanted this guy out of the locker room. It's that something must have gone bad. Look, again, this is pure speculation. I don't have any sources in any locker room, much less the one in Boston. But this, in historically, we've seen some of these trades, and it's almost always because this guy has to go, right? Something has to change. Locker room dynamic plus what? And then in that case, right? Teams know you're desperate, right? They're going to lowball you. They're like, what do we need a DH for? Right? Because I don't think other teams in the league really see him as a third baseman, right? They know he doesn't want to play first because if he did, he would have just done it in Boston and they would have moved on with their lives because God knows they needed a first baseman in Boston. And the other teams are going to say, oh, I don't know if he's a team player. They're going to get to lowball the crap out of you.
Give Abraham Toro some shine. He's been playing outstanding for Boston at first base recently.
As he's been known to do for 2 weeks at a time, right? 3 weeks. He's a weird hitter. He doesn't do any particular thing that well, but he can put it all together for like these little moments. We saw the same thing when he was in Oakland. It was like, oh, every once in a while, I'd be like, oh, should I be adding Abraham Toro? It's like, no, but I don't care. Fine. Like, if you want to do it for now, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So just, you know, a strange trade but kind of to summarize everything we talked about, no change for Devers. He's still going to be Rafael Devers. No real change in ballpark factor moving from Boston to San Francisco, or at least less change than perceived.
There is a ball, like just the ballpark factor will be a lot different, but the type of hitter Devers is makes it sort of null and void because he hits the ball to all fields. He has power to all fields. This is not an Isak Paredes type who really needs a short porch in a very particular spot, right? That's just not how Devers operates. He sprays the ball all over the place in the air, on the ground. He doesn't really care that much about park factors, right? The only park factor that helps him a lot is moving walls in, because that's just more fly balls that would land. But that's true of every hitter in the league.
And then, of course, we mentioned the biggest loser in the trade is Wilmer Flores, probably going to lose at-bats at designated hitter as Devers takes over. Really no spot for him in San Francisco's lineup moving forward, and maybe we see another domino fall with San Francisco potentially dealing Flores. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Maybe this gives a slight boost to, like, Jung-Hoo Lee and Helio Ramos and Willy Adames to make that lineup one player deeper, right? More runs to come in. Not like they were getting, I mean, they were getting pretty good production out of that spot from Wilmer Flores, but like that's only so far. I think rest of season prognosis was that was going to get worse. So now they're not going to lose anything there and they probably get a boost, but it's marginal, right? Like, I don't think anyone in mixed league should be thinking this is a trading opportunity. It just doesn't really do anything for most of the players that you would have been able to trade, except for one guy who's now probably untradeable entirely, which is Flores.
Yeah, we'll move on to some more news and notes here. We'll talk about some IL guys, or guys coming back from the IL, rather. So some interesting names coming off of the IL this week into next week as well. Cleveland outfielder Lane Thomas is back. Athletics first baseman Nick Kurtz, Baltimore third baseman Jordan Westberg, and Baltimore outfielder Cedric Mullins have all returned already. And then another interesting name that's coming off soon is going to be New York Yankees designated hitter Giancarlo Stanton. He's due to come back either Monday or Tuesday. So a bunch of interesting names there, Scott. Which ones are you most interested by?
Yeah, so we'll start sort of from the top here. Let's talk about the two guys in Baltimore. Jordan Westberg, at least in the short term, he got a start at leadoff today. He's been hitting the ball incredibly well since coming off the IL. And this is something we sort of talked about. Westberg is an extremely aggressive hitter, particularly early in the count, right? Now, one of the reasons Westberg is getting these shots near the top of the order is because the Orioles have played a ton of lefties lately. Right? Like four of the last six games they've played have been against left-handed starters. So they've let Jackson Holliday move down a bit in the order, a guy who I still believe in, especially in the leadoff spot. But Jordan Westberg, in the meantime, has moved up in the order, especially against lefties where most of the, like a lot of the power hitters on this team are left-handed. So getting good opportunity. He's someone who I think is going to be a contributor for the rest of the way, but just watch out for the ups and downs again, because he's so aggressive early in the count. And that means adjustments can be a little bit harder to make, because if he doesn't see a lot of pitches, right? Like this dude's swinging right out the gate. Great article we did on this last year called the Westberg Paradox. I recommend you check it out. But that's why he has such a high swinging strike rate and yet a relatively low strikeout rate. And it's because he swings early and often. So he doesn't really let himself get to two strikes all that often. He's putting the ball in play. So, so Westberg, interesting. With Mullins, all these lefties, and he keeps starting in center field, right? Now, part of that is because Colton Cowser has been injured, although he's also left-handed. Dylan Carlson's played fairly well, but they've been putting Mullins in center anyway. So I guess for now, he's certainly at least streamable, but this outfield is really crowded now for for Baltimore, especially when lefties come around. So something to keep an eye on. And then let's talk a little bit about the Yankees if we're going to talk about crowded. So Giancarlo Stanton potentially coming back. I'm not going to, you know, truly believe it's happening until he's actually in, because out of nowhere, this guy can tell us, oh yeah, I've had a torn pec for the last 8 months. I guess I better sit. It's what it's going to do is put a lot of pressure on specifically Ben Rice right now. Those of you in leagues where you just need appearances to qualify a catcher, that's what's been happening with Ben Rice. Ben Rice has been slotting into the catcher spot. He's not starting there, but he's been finding ways to get time at catcher, which again, makes him far more, it makes his value far more interesting, right? This dude hits the ball really hard when he hits it. Even with this sort of bad luck he's had of late, he hits the ball extremely hard. He doesn't have too big a contact issues either. He puts the ball in play plenty. So it's really weird that a guy with this, I mean, very consistently 15% barrel rates, still hit, you know, high exit velocities, great expected stats. He should have much better numbers than he does. The problem is, even if they say he's going to catch, he's certainly not going to be a full-time catcher, right? So Ben Rice is not going to slide into full-time catcher spot. And what they've been doing so far now, hey, maybe they're going to switch it up, but Austin Wells is hitting well, right? And Austin Wells is a decent catcher. So at best, what does this turn into? Like what Atlanta has going on, which is an every other day thing, make both guys a lot less valuable. I have huge concerns about Ben Rice's playing time. Once Giancarlo Stanton is back up, he's going to be sitting multiple times a week. Now, you can still be very relevant in 10 to 12 teamers, right? There's no reason Ben Rice can't be what we expect Kerry Carpenter to be. However, that's not exactly what he's been. And he hasn't, the thing with Kerry Carpenter is the Tigers just, we know for a fact he's starting against every right-handed pitcher, right? We don't know what's going to happen with Ben Rice. So I'm not saying you have to cut him yet, but you should be ready to cut him if he's only appearing 3-4 times a week. It is just, you have to be so good and execute so well to be 10 to 12 team fantasy relevant when you're missing 3 games a week, right? That's basically halftime. Like how many players at the end of the year in fantasy, how many guys rank in the top 100 hitters who only played 80 something games, right? That aren't catchers who get this huge boost in value just from position. Yeah. Again, he may get catcher eligibility, although in a lot of leagues, you're waiting for 20 appearances. Even in Yahoo, you need 5 starts or 10 appearances. He's halfway to the appearances. He doesn't have any of the starts. So it's still going to be a little while. What are you going to do until then? Now, if you have a deep team, you're doing well in your league, maybe you can keep holding him there because the batted ball quality is so good. He could end up being a catcher and getting enough time between DH and giving rest to Goldschmidt at first and catching here and there. He may get enough time to make it all come together to be something valuable, but Ben Rice, absolutely someone I'm very interested in terms of batted ball quality, but there's more to fantasy success than batted ball quality, because batted ball quality requires you to get at bats, right? That's going to be a problem for Ben Rice.
So in the hypothetical situation that Ben Rice does gain catcher eligibility relatively soon, right? Something happens, he gets 5 starts in the next 2 to 3 weeks and becomes catcher eligible. He's currently ranked 145 in the hitter list. Obviously only first base, maybe utility eligible in some leagues. I'm going to throw out some catcher names that are currently ranked above him, and you can kind of let me know where he falls once he does become catcher eligible.
Let me add one piece to this. I will answer as if he's getting catcher eligibility and playing 3 or 4 times a week. Because here's the thing. The number one thing, getting catcher eligibility just keeps him ranked. If it's just the eligibility, it just keeps him ranked. The playing time matters. I still don't rank many catchers who sit more than 2-3 times a week, right? Drake Baldwin is just kind of clinging to the list, but he's an every other day catcher, right? Sean Murphy, not in there at all, right? And those are two guys. Like, it's just very hard. Like I didn't, early in the season, Miguel Amaya and Carson Kelly were just raking, right? But they were only playing every other day, so they didn't really get raked, right? Because I was like, they each sit 3 or 4 times a week. So if this is all, if Ben Rice gets the catcher eligibility and finds his way into the lineup 4 to 5 times a week, that is the preface for these answers.
Well, let's start with Drake Baldwin, right? Drake Baldwin currently ranked 131 in tier 14. You know, if playing time is the same,
let's go.
If playing time is equal, catcher eligibility is equal. Are you going Ben Rice or Drake Baldwin?
Ben Rice. Ben Rice hits the ball harder. Like it's not always overly complicated. This, right? It's like Ben Rice hits the ball harder. I expect this luck to turn around. He's in a better lineup. I thought Atlanta would be better than this, but frankly, the Yankees have a better ballpark, better lineup. It plays really, really well for Ben Rice.
Yeah, I'm trying to find another playing time comp, and there really isn't a good one. You know, I'm scrolling up the list and, you know, finding JT Realmuto, who's playing pretty regularly, Hunter Goodman, who's playing almost every day.
Well, Hunter Goodman's an interesting one. So Hunter Goodman's been good, but I really only care about him at home, right? Like, I know he's had some success on the road, but long-term, I think he's really only useful at home. His big thing is that he plays every day because they'll let him play in the outfield too, right? But similar, I mean, Ben Rice has better tools and skills than him, right? He's just not going to have the playing time. Right. If he starts playing every day and he's catcher eligible, Ben Rice is well inside the top 100. Right. That's just the way it works because, again, I believe in Ben Rice's skills. I hate the opportunity.
Now, we talked about last week him getting dealt to, you know, one of those first base needy teams. It would be awesome to see. Certainly, you know, the Seattles or Texas Rangers or somebody who needs.
Or until about 6 hours ago, the Giants.
That's right. That's right. On that note, we'll take our first break. We'll be back with more Hacks and Jacks after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on pitcher list. Let's talk about who went to the IL and how that may open up some opportunities for some other players. This week, headed to the IL, Boston outfielder Willier Abreu. We know who filled that gap. San Francisco third baseman Matt Chapman. We know who filled that gap. Minnesota third baseman Royce Lewis is headed back to the IL, and San Diego Padres outfielder Jackson Merrill is also heading back to the IL with concussion symptoms. Scott, which of those opportunities, I mean, talk about any of them, which of those opportunities is most interesting for you, and whose fantasy value rises with those guys going on the IL?
Yeah, let's start with the easy one. If you were still rostering Royce Lewis, you can let him go. There's no need to keep him on your IL unless you're in like a very deep format. He just has not been able to perform. We have no idea how many more times he's going to go on the IL. There's just so much risk. He's, to me now, just a streamer when healthy, if you're in need at that specific spot. I think that, I mean, sure, there's a mild winner here. The guy who's been playing third base mostly is like Brooks Lee. Maybe Cody Clemens or Jonah Bride get a little more time, but who cares? Right. This is really just, you don't need Royce Lewis anymore. You can let him go. And the rest of the roster is probably just going to keep working out exactly as it did. So no real, nothing really there except stop killing yourself over, Royce Lewis. We will, you know, I can talk briefly about the Giants just again for one more second. Casey Schmidt is up. He's absolutely raking right now. This is short term. We've seen Casey Schmidt do this exact thing before. It's very short lived. I put in a decent sized bid on him in an NL only league because I need at bats, and he's got them for the next little while. Right. So that's someone you can grab again, but that is just a pure stream because you literally can't find anything else. But yeah, I know people are going to be wondering about him because he's hitting the ball really well right now. He's not this, right? He's this for very, very short periods of time. So, you know, something to keep in mind if you're thinking about bid on Casey Schmidt in a mixed league, I'd say don't. In terms of Jackson Merrill, so hopefully, I mean, Jackson Merrill's not been great since coming off the IL. I don't think this is the reason for that, but any time to get more healthy and get right is good for Jackson Merrill. You know, I was very skeptical on the power for him last year. And now that he's not showing it, I wonder if maybe I was onto something, but maybe not. It's way too early to tell. The guy who wins in that is Gavin Sheets. So Gavin Sheets is going to, Gavin Sheets is primarily a platoon bat. I don't love him against left-handed pitching, but he's got a bunch of power. He's going to get some extra time. There's some other guys who are going to get more time. Like they called up Trenton Brooks, but none of these other guys are really that useful to us in fantasy. The one who matters is Gavin Sheets. He gets more time. He's still more of just a streaky left-handed power hitter. There's a bunch of those in baseball. Gavin Sheets is one of them. Not that different from the others, except now he's got a better shot at everyday playing time because he's filling in for a guy on the concussion. IL. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of these injuries just don't do a lot for us in fantasy because they're going to be filled either by platoon guys or guys that were already kind of relevant and now just might get a little bit more playing time, but not enough for me to be like, oh, yeah, this is the guy. Oh, yeah, this is exactly what we were looking for. That'd be like if a Ben Rice got everyday playing time. That's when we're like, oh, man, this really matters. But for like Gavin Sheets, we're like, oh, I guess you can keep using him, you know, if you've got him, unless he gets cold and then you can cut him for another power hitting outfielder, which that's like him, of which, again, there are many.
Well, the one injury that did open up opportunity, of course, it's somebody who's probably already been rostered. So it's somebody we've been waiting on all season. Willier Abreu going to the IL opened up an opportunity for Boston outfield prospect Roman Anthony. He gets called up. He's one of a handful of prospects this week that we're pretty excited about. What do you know about Roman Anthony and you know, how many places do you have him, or did you miss out on the Anthony sweepstakes in draft season?
I got him in one points league and he's probably going to get replaced for me soon. So here's the thing. I like Roman Anthony. Obviously this is one of the top prospects in the game. Being a top prospect in the game does not mean you're going to have an instant strong debut. This is a guy with a ton of power, a little bit of speed, but again, mostly power. That's what you're after. It can take a little while for power to develop in the major leagues. The plate discipline looks fine, right? As he's come up. He doesn't have a barrel yet, you know, doesn't have a home run either. He is hitting the ball very hard, but doesn't have a barrel yet because everything's really been on the ground. And it's the one thing that concerns me, right? This feels a lot. I'm not comping the two players directly, but this is a problem Junior Caminero had as well, right? So, and also, frankly, Jordan Walker, all those guys were considered top three to five prospects in the game at their debut. The problem is they hit a bunch of ground balls. Now, some of these guys figure out how to get the ball in the air and put that 90-something plus exit velocity to use. Some of them don't, right? Those are two sort of opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of how these guys have turned out. But the high ground ball rate is something to keep an eye on. It looks like the Red Sox are planning to bench Anthony against left-handed pitching, at least at times early on. I think, obviously, long-term, they see him as an everyday player. But for now, they might give him days off, help coach him, help do these other things on those days, and maybe let him come in and pinch hit later on. But he may sit against quite a few lefties. So again, something to keep in mind with Roman Anthony. This is a guy who's got, you know, 25, 30, 35 home run power, depending on how often you get the ball in the air, but he's not doing that yet. And that may take some time because if it was as easy as, oh yeah, I'll just hit it in the air now, right? Then Yandy Diaz would have a million home runs, but he doesn't. He has 15 because he hits the ball on the ground every time. So he's obviously someone that I'm not dropping in deeeper leagues. Now, again, this is in a 10 or a 12 team, or especially like a points league. In that particular league, the replacement level is extremely high. It's not a keeper situation. So I just don't need to hold on to a Roman Anthony. But, you know, I get it why you do if you're just waiting it out. So he's someone that's interesting. Willier Abreu himself, I've talked about him a few times. He's this streaky left-handed hitter who's got some swing and his miss in his game. The more Anthony performs well, the harder it will be for Willier Abreu to break into the lineup. I'm not a huge fan of him long-term. You don't have to keep him if you don't want to in a 10 or a 12 teamer, especially if your IL is tight. Look, I know his overall numbers are good, but it's a steep roller coaster, and that's when he's got playing time, right? So it's we very much wonder what it's going to be like when he comes back.
Well, let's talk about the other handful of prospects that have come up, and they're all infielders, all in different roles coming up. Philadelphia infielder Otto Kemp, Los Angeles Angels infielder Christian Moore, and Washington infielder Brady House have all been called up. Moore probably the most exciting of those prospects, at least from what we've seen out of them. Any of them kind of tickling your fancy in fantasy?
So I really wish I could tell you it's Christian Moore, because in terms of like a guy who could make a big difference because he's got like the raw tools. He's got some pretty decent power. He's got a bit of speed, but there's huge hit tool risk here. He was striking out, you know, 27.3% of the time in AAA. That number is 27.2. It was 27.4% in AA. Just this season, that tends to translate to above 30% when you hit the majors. He's walking. Again, we're talking about 7 plate appearances here. He's taken a walk already, which is really good. He struck out 3 times. That's less good, but you know, maybe it's fine. Very, very volatile. In a 10 or 12 team league, I really hope I'm not looking in that direction to try to find a starting second baseman. But I mean, I guess maybe you are, but that's not a great place to be because I'm not going to expect he seems like a guy who's going to need some extra time to really figure out major league pitching. With Otto Kemp, I mean, he's had an amazing day today. He's had, you know, he had what, like 4 hits, 3 runs, 2 RBI, and a stolen base. And he got caught stealing once. So really, really nice day for Otto Kemp. In terms of like overall tools, I don't have, I mean, he had a really good year so far this season in AAA, right? He had 14 home runs in 58 games, 11 stolen bases. The strikeout rate was a little high. I expect him to strike out around 30% before he finds maybe a little bit of a groove, but it's still going to be above 25% in the major leagues. So I don't expect him to have a great OBP, but this is a guy who I don't think we'd been paying a lot of attention to in fantasy, but maybe he's something in 15 teamers. He's primarily first base, and it's just so deep in the majors, so deep in 10 or 12 team leagues. I'm not that interested in going this way at first base because there's just probably better options. Again, I'm not saying he's a nobody, should ignore him in all formats, but in a 10 or 12 team league, I would want, if you asked me in the Reddit AMA, should I add Otto Kemp at first base? My first question would be, tell me the 5 guys most rostered or the 5 guys who are the best over the last 14 days or whatever at first base. I guarantee you, I'm probably going to find one who's a little more interesting to me long-term.
I think Brady House could have a path to playing time in Washington. I know he was having a good year in Washington's farm system, but I mean, there's really nobody else to play third base for the Nationals. Tena got sent down. I mean, I guess they could plug in Amed Rosario. They've done that a couple times, but you know, I kind of like the opportunity for House here. As long as, you know, Trey Lipscomb doesn't get called up to take his spot, I think that House could at least have a chance to get some at bats for Washington. Let me pull up his AAA stats real quick. I know he's had a good season. I don't know how good. Okay, 13 home runs in 64 games. Yeah, there's no speed there. It's pretty much all power. But again, 27% K rate with only a 7% walk rate. That's concerning, especially once you get to the major league level. So it'll be interesting to see if any of these guys really pan out.
I'm a lot more concerned about that hit tool. I don't think it's great. I think he's going to be someone who hits for a low average. He doesn't walk as much as you'd want. I mean, he just doesn't walk that much at all, especially for someone who strikes out as often as he does. I think he could be a guy who starts out, goes on a heater, right? Like, oh, hey, hit a bunch of home runs off the bat. But he's, you know, even if he starts walking, he's got this Nolan Gorman feeling to him, which is like, look, these all power guys can be good for short stretches of time, but without a hit tool, it just can't survive, right? We're seeing this with Kyle Stowers right now, who is just really struggling. These adjustment periods for these all power, no hit tool guys are so ugly. They can last a long time. Now look, some of these guys figure it out and they're just able to keep it up and going all the time. Helio Ramos is someone who sort of figured that out. But I've got a lot more stories about the Kyle Stowers and Nolan Gormans of the world who just don't figure out how to consistently find success. I mean, Nolan Gorman, when he first came up, we thought he was, he actually made it into like my top 60 at one point. He was hitting so well, but he never cleared up the holes in his swing. And now he's someone who I'm not going to rank because I don't believe at all in the hit tool. And that, I mean, like even with, you know, even someone said, oh, he's going to play all year. I'm like, to what end, right? That's just Paul DeJong, right? It's just another guy who you can stream for a short time, but you're going to end up looking for something else because you're going to notice that he's 0 for his last 15 with 10 strikeouts.
Well, talking about prospects that didn't quite end up making adjustments and got sent back down, this week we've got 2 more. Let me know if either of these names are worth a stash in 12 teamers, maybe 15 teamers. I'll let you be the judge of that. So Washington outfielder Robert Hassel gets sent down, and Baltimore outfielder Heston Kerstad, with the two Orioles coming back off the IL, gets sent down as well in that Baltimore outfield logjam. Are Kerstad or Hassel worth a stash in non-keeper leagues?
No. I like Kerstad, but there's no opportunity. I mean, he's only getting platoon at-bats. There's just not enough there with Hassel. There's a little bit of power here, maybe a little bit of speed, but just he doesn't walk like he didn't walk at all in his 75 plate appearances. He wasn't walking that much in AAA. There's not enough power to make me forgive that, nor enough speed. So even if he was, if Kerstad got everyday playing time, that's a guy I'm like, hey, look, if you've got a wide open spot on your bench, like go ahead and stream him, see what happens. With Hassel, even if you told me, oh, he's the everyday guy now, I'd be like, okay, cool. I'm really happy for him and his family, but I'm not so interested as a fantasy owner, manager.
Well, we'll take another quick break. We'll be back after this with Scott's top 150 hitters list for this week. And we'll dive into some names of risers and fallers after this break. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. We're going to dive into Scott's top 150 hitters list this week. Every week, Scott puts this out. It's his ranking of the top 150 hitters in baseball. We always talk about the risers and the fallers. So we'll start with the guys who have climbed the list this week. It takes us to tier four, 25th overall, up 10 spots from last week. It's San Diego Padres third baseman Manny Machado. Scott, what's Manny been doing well, and why have we jumped him up?
Just padding that Hall of Fame career, right? Like, dude's got 56.2 WAR. If you thought that was like a bold statement I was making, it's not. He's stealing bases. He's driving runners home. He's only got 10 home runs, which is a little light for him, although he's still slugging 506 because he's got a bunch of doubles. Barrel rate is good. Hard hit rates as good as ever. Expected stats are all there. None of this is luck. His average exit velocity is as hard as ever. Dude's just seeing the ball really, really well at a position that, again, has just been a real struggle for fantasy this year. So when you're talking about a guy who on the season is hitter number 16 at this moment, the number two third baseman in the season at this moment, it's hard not to move him up, right? I mean, he's a stud and he's durable. That's the other thing. He's durable as heck. I'm probably jinxing it or whatever, but only once since 2015 has he missed more than, 12 games in a season. He only played 138 back in 2023. That's the most time he's missed since the start of the 2015 season.
Yeah, and his evolution from like this punk kid who got traded from Baltimore to LA and then, you know, wouldn't run out grounders and was just causing trouble, was this toxic behavioral problem in locker rooms, to the clubhouse culture leader that he's become in San Diego. Like, the maturity process as an Orioles fan watching that growth has been both really fun and really frustrating. Because he was the next big thing in Baltimore for a very long time. And, it didn't work out the way that Orioles fans might want. So,
I've always deeply believed that that was way overplayed, like by the media on, like, he was like a young, you have to remember, this dude came up extreme. Like, he played 51 games in the major leagues at age 19, right? Like, do you know how old he was when he left Baltimore? He was like 25, right? Like, he started playing his first full season in the major leagues was his age 20 season. And I get it. Like, there were some legit criticisms for him, but like, I feel like he had just a natural aging progression. And because he's a guy, he was willing to talk. He wasn't super reserved. I felt like it got overplayed, but Manny Machado he's been an absolute stud he hit 35 home runs in 2015, ever since the age 22. Since then, his lowest full season home run total is 28. 2021, he hit 28 home runs. That's the fewest he's hit in a full season it was his second full season in the majors, 2015.
Yeah, Manny Machado, good at baseball. We'll stay at third base. We'll move down to tier six, 41st overall, up 10 spots as well. It's Tampa Bay Rays third baseman, Junior Caminero.
Yeah, nothing complicated here. Getting the ball in the air. Dude hits the ball hard. Now he's hitting it hard in the air. That means it's leaving the park. Posted this recently on X and on Blue Sky, but it's just, it's a fly ball spike. Now, if this fly ball rate spike lasts, this is a high level first baseman. There's another tier or two for him to jump. There's a reason this guy was one of the top three prospects in all of baseball. He's got huge power. That ball is in the air. He can do it. Now, we've seen these spikes, unfortunately, evaporate pretty quickly for him so far in his career. Of course, his career has barely started. So I'm not super worried about that yet. But I mean, I've been using this terminology. I've stolen some meteorology terminology in terms of like breakout watch and breakout warning. So like a watch means there's all of the components necessary for it to happen. And then a warning is it's actually happening. Like we're seeing the swirl in the sky. Like it's actually happening. Right. So Junior Caminero to me is in the breakout warning, right? He's had a couple of these fly ball spikes so far. This one's a little better than before. And frankly, he has so much skill that any mild increase is going to get us really excited. Right. Whereas a guy like Joe Adell is more in the watch phase. We've seen him do this before. It's never lasted long. He has decision-making and contact issues that can spike up. He's really got all those things are working for him right now, but he needs all of them to kind of keep working. Whereas with Junior Caminero really just has one problem. He doesn't have contact issues. He doesn't have decision-making issues. He just hits the ball on the ground too much. Whereas Joe Adell hits the ball in the right direction, but has a hard time hitting the ball, has a hard time deciding when to swing. So that's why it's more of a watch. Like all the pieces are there right now, but you know, we've seen these fizzle out and nothing happened before, right? Many of you have been in tornado watch. Very few of you have been in a tornado, right? So that's kind of how it works with Joe Adell. But with Junior Caminero, this kind of storm front, so to speak, is one that is much more dangerous, right? The sky is very green. There's hail. You should be very, even if there's not a tornado, you're going to be like, wow, this was a storm, right? That's where we're at with Junior Caminero.
He certainly does damage to the baseball. That's for sure. We'll move on to Jacob Wilson, Athletics shortstop, who's been having an outstanding rookie campaign. He's up to tier 7, 55th overall, 19 spots up the leaderboards. He's ahead of shortstops like Anthony Volpe, Dansby Swanson, Bo Bichette. He's in the same tier as Jeremy Pena and Corey Seager. We love Jacob Wilson. He's been doing awesome things. Tell me about him.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Jeremy Pena is the guy that I've kind of linked him with in my mind. These are both contact type hitters. Now, Jacob Wilson is more extreme on the contact. I think Pena has a little bit more power, a little bit more speed, whereas Jacob Wilson is a guy, like, he has a 5% walk rate, 5.7% strikeout rate. To me, this is actually Luis Arraez is the light version of Jacob Wilson in terms of fantasy production, right? So he's going to, like, this is not a guy who I would expect. He's already got 8 home runs. I don't think he's going to get to 20, right? That's just not Jacob Wilson's game. Again, these contact guys, they can find power that we didn't necessarily expect before. Jacob Wilson didn't actually have 20 home runs in his entire minor league career. Granted, it was only 2 seasons, but he didn't, right? He had, let's see, 2, 5. He had 16 for his entire minor league career. So I just don't expect him to get to 20. But I do expect him to hit well over 300. I think he's, you know, definitely a favorite for the batting title in the American League. I think that he can get to over 80 RBI and over 80 runs scored, if not 90, right? Like these are the things that Luis Arraez has struggled with. Luis Arraez has struggled with injury. Luis Arraez has struggled to put together the counting stats necessary to be more than just batting average. That's what Jacob Wilson can do, right? Like he can do enough of that. He runs just a little bit more. He hits just a few more home runs. So even if he finishes with only 15 home runs and hitting 320 and having counting stats, that makes you a high level player. The ceiling is a little bit capped, right? Cause he doesn't have big power. He doesn't have big speed. He's very reliant on the lineup around him to get the counting stats. And it's the artist formerly known as Oakland, but there's all the right pieces are there. If he played for a different team, he'd be even higher on this list, I think. If he was showing these skills and playing for a good offense, it'd be a totally different story. So I like Jacob Wilson a lot. I also like Jeremy Pena, though. Like, I think the Jacob Wilson thing has made it so that we don't talk quite as much about Jeremy Pena, who, you know, he's always gotten the opportunity. He's hitter number 12 right now on the season, believe it or not. 9 home runs, 14 stolen bases, hitting .328 himself. Now, I don't think his batting average is going to stay quite as high. He strikes out just a little bit more, but, you know, he still does all the right things. You know, nothing here that I'm seeing in the batted ball profile for Jeremy Pena is screaming luck. Like, it's not some elevated line drive rate or anything like that. Like, the BABIP's high, that's because he's hitting the ball hard. Like, yeah, he's outperforming his Statcast metrics by a little bit, but not by enough to think that he can't stay a top 50 hitter rest of the way, right? So big fan of him too. Similar skill set with a little less batting average, a little bit more pop, a little bit more speed.
Well, we move from shortstop and we go behind the plate, and Baltimore Orioles finally have something good happening. Adley Rutschman moves up 19 spots in the hitter list. He's into tier 9, number 70 overall. It's finally coming together for Adley after what has felt like almost a year and a half long slump.
Until you just jinxed it. But so with Adley, the thing is, he's the kind of guy who can jump up the list real fast because I already think he's good. I'm not wondering if he's good. I'm trying to figure out why he was being bad. Right. So when that's my starting point, this guy's really good. And I just want him to go back to being good. He can fly up the wrist real quick, especially because the plate discipline is still very good. The ratios obviously aren't there yet, but we've seen some improvements. He's barreling up the ball just fine. The hard hit rate is fine. The expected stats are in line with what we saw in 2023, if not better, right? At least in some respects, but the results are much, 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 much worse, right? And again, it's not an obvious thing that I'm seeing, right? So, I mean, I guess it's fewer. He's got fewer line drives, but that shouldn't be a big deal. This is a great hit tool. This is a guy with great, he has great plate discipline. These pieces are going to come back together. Let's keep in mind, I mean, he's 27 years old, but you know, he hasn't been in the major leagues for that long. This is his fourth season in the major. So I think he can put it back together to be a high level catcher. He has a lot of ceiling. And again, if you drafted him a catcher, I think you just keep holding and going, right? And I get it. You're like, oh, but I could have had Ivan Herrera. I could have done all these other things. And like, yeah, I get it. It's frustrating. But you've got a catcher who plays every day with a huge ceiling. And I don't really believe in rostering two catchers, even if I rank Ivan Herrera higher right now. Just because this is a very important note that I keep making and I'm not going to stop making. Just because we say a guy should be rostered in every league does not mean you have to be the one who rosters him. If you have Adley Rutschman at catcher, he's showing signs of life. You're going to keep Adley Rutschman at catcher while he's showing signs of life, right? Don't worry about the other shiny baubles at catcher, right? Because what that's doing is eating a bench spot that you're not really going to be using very well, and that you could have a streamer or someone who's actually going to make it into your lineup more often instead of hemming and hawing about which freaking catcher to play today. Just use one. For the vast majority of you in 10 to 12 team leagues with one catcher, just have one catcher. Don't mess with this other stuff. You can have two if like one of them's like Cal Raleigh. And you happened for some reason to have Ivan Herrera too. Okay, fine. Cal Raleigh can play. You know, he can be in your DH spot. He's as good as anyone you'll have in your DH spot. But for most of you, if you've got William Contreras, had a lot of questions about William Contreras. What do I do with William Contreras? Nothing. Do nothing. I get it. It hurts. You're not losing because of catcher, right? That's not what's happening. William Contreras has the potential to be the best catcher in the game, right? Which is what he was last season. We thought he'd be the best by far this year. Didn't work out that way because Cal Raleigh decided he wanted to hit 40 bombs, but just be patient. Focus on your other positions. If you've got a William Contreras or an Adley Rutschman, just wait, play it out. I get it. It's a little frustrating. The difference between a good catcher and a bad catcher over the long term just isn't that much, especially when bad is still like middle of the pack catcher. It's when you start balancing upside and actual performance. So don't worry about it so much.
We'll move on to a pair of Cubs bats. Ian Happ and Michael Bush both climbing the ranks quite a bit this week. Happ moving up to tier 9, number 72 overall, 19 spots up the ranks this week. Bush, tier 10, 79th overall, up 24 spots. the Cubs are really good. Like, their lineup is outstanding, and these two bats have been part of the reason why.
Yeah, Michael Busch has cooled off just a little bit. I mean, I say that, like, his rolling 15-game WRC plus coming into today was still 172, right? And that's after having a fairly bad seven-day stretch, although he had two hits today, maybe coming back around from that. He's got a bunch of home runs lately. Look, he sits against most lefties, about half of them generally, but that's more than enough to be a valuable first baseman. Again, first base is deep. So, you know, respecting the Michael Busch, I think could very well end this season as a, you know, last year he hit the 21 home runs and his numbers felt a lot better than they ended up being, but the strikeout rate is down quite a bit. I think this year we could see Michael Busch be like this 24 to 26 home run guy who hits closer to like 260 with a nice OBP, decent slugging. The ratios will all be there. I think the counting stats obviously are up. He only had 65 RBI last season in 152 games, 66 games. He's already got 39 because this offense just continues to score runs like crazy. So I think the boost in counting stats, the drop in strikeout rate, all of that kind of comes together to say, yeah, this guy's a lock in first percent or first baseman in 10 to 12 teamers that you can just lock in, just let it go.
So we'll take one more look at another riser. He's 124th overall this week, up 20 spots. That's tier 13. It's Minnesota Twins outfielder Matt Wallner. And Wallner was a guy in the preseason that I actually thought could really make an impact this year. 25-30 home runs didn't seem out of the question. And we're finally seeing him tap into a little bit of that power here in the past couple weeks, Scott.
Yeah, so Matt Wallner is a guy who I've always been interested in because he's got plus power, right? And minus contact ability. So what that ends up creating is, number one, this StatCast thing that makes him look probably a lot better than he is, because StatCast is all about batted ball quality, right? And don't get me wrong, when Matt Wallner hits the ball, he hits it really, really, really far. Now, he does pop up way too many times, but the dude hits the ball really, really hard and he hits a lot of balls in the air, right? That's a great combo. The problem is his career zone contact rate is 72.5%. You will recall that my warning number is 80. My big warning number is 75. Yeah, this season, he's at 73.5, which, if the season ended today, would be the best zone contact rate of his career. It's one of the worst in all of baseball. So what that means right now, it's hard to believe this is going to get a whole lot better. We've seen a lot of plate appearances. We've seen 694 plate appearances coming into today from Matt Wallner. It's hard to believe it's going to get a whole lot better. Now, his patience helps a lot, right? The strikeout rate is down. He's walking at about 11.4% of the time. What this means probably is a low average, high power guy who ends up being very streaky, like big ups and downs because he misses a ton in the zone. It's so hard when you miss a ton in the zone. Now, this team, you know, the Twins, they've had some injuries around. They don't have a lot of options on this team in the outfield. Like 3 years ago, this team couldn't get enough corner outfield and infield guys. And now they kind of don't have any, right? Like the only bench outfielders they really have are like Cody Kwemens and the guy they just called up, which is Deshaun Kearsey Jr. Neither of whom are everyday players at all for me. And both of them are left-handed. So I think Matt Wallner is going to kind of find himself playing every day in the outfield because basically every outfielder on this team that could challenge Matt Wallner's spot in right field is left-handed, right? Like they are just as left-handed as he is. So Matt Wallner has a chance to kind of take this job and run with it for a little bit. But I think those contact issues are going to hold him back from being truly a high-level player, but he's going to have some streaks where you're going to want me to rank him a lot higher than I do, because when he's on and when he's hitting, he looks really, really good. So it's interesting. Uncle Ted compared him to Kerry Carpenter in terms of that. The big difference is Kerry Carpenter is a lot better at making contact, right? So even when Kerry Carpenter slumps, it doesn't look like it does when Matt Wallner's slumping, because Matt Wallner does it with like a 40% strikeout rate and just does a lot of things that don't work very well. And that's like that shortcoming. That's one of the differences. There's a ton. I talked about Gavin Sheets earlier. There's a ton of these left-handed power hitting players, right? The biggest thing that they have to have is at least some contact ability. They do not need to be good at making contact. They need to be not horrific at making contact. Unfortunately, as of right now, Matt Wallner is horrific at making contact, but when he does, it's awesome, right? These other, like whenever we see lefties who show better contact, so like that's like Michael Bush, right? So Michael Bush, power, left-handed, not quite as extreme as a guy like Matt Wallner, but now that the contact ability is improved a bit, we're seeing, you know, and we're seeing that in the reduced strikeout rate. We're seeing that in the improved batting average. That gives them, that's when those guys can start playing every day, right? Teams aren't going to have a guy who goes up there against lefties just hacking, who has a hard enough time making contact against righties. They're not going to start throwing you in there against lefties too. But when you start showing, hey, I'm at least going to make contact, I've got a shot to make contact, then it's like, okay, we can at least put you out there, because when you do make contact, you do hit the ball hard. So maybe it's worth putting you out there rather than my fourth rate, you know, 25th man on the roster corner outfielder, right? That's the guy you're trying to beat. The team has to think, I have a better chance with you than that guy in this situation. Matt Wallner is going to get a little bit of a boost here, though, because they're all left-handed. All those other guys he's competing with are left-handed. He's going to get an extra shot. But if they had a right-handed outfielder, he would almost certainly be in a platoon.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the fallers in Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. We're talking about the fallers in our hitters list, the guys who have dropped in the rankings from last week to this week's list. Scott, we start with Fernando Tatis Jr. in tier three. He's dropped from tier two to tier three. He's only down five spots, but he's down to number 13 overall. What's going on with Fernando Tatis?
Our power metrics are very depressing right now. So if you look in the article, you'll see the rolling chart on his power ability has just fallen off the table. There's a lot of reasons that could be the case. You could be speculating about injury. I know someone mentioned that, oh, he got hit on the hand by a pitch and he hasn't been the same. I will say today was a great sign. He went 4-for-5 with 2 doubles, 3 runs scored, stolen base, did a lot of things we needed to see him do. I think he's going to start coming around. He's been walking a lot more lately. The strikeouts have come way down lately, I think, as he makes an adjustment at the plate. I think that's what's happening, is he's just not attacking the right pitches. It doesn't show up in our decision value so much, but I think there's just a little bit going on where he's not doing exactly what he wants to be doing. But he's got some stolen bases lately. I think this can rebound. And let's be clear, the top three tiers are crazy deep, right? And Fernando Tatis Jr. has the ability to start pushing. I don't want to say tier one, but he's got the ability to start to become like the number one guy in tier two if he's really clicking, right? He almost got there earlier this season. So I'm not worried about it. So it's five spots, which is a lot when you're that high in the list, because there's something legitimate to be worried about, that power falling off. Although we are seeing a little bit of a turnaround there. So that's nice to see. You know, and he's not the only veteran that's struggling, right? So I know a guy who's been in a longer slump than Fernando Tatis Jr. is Corey Seager. And with Corey Seager, it's another guy who I'm like, look, yeah, he did come off the injured list. Could it be injury that's bothering him? I don't know. But with Seager, what I do know is when I look at those rolling charts, that rolling WRC plus, that rolling OPS, whatever one you want to use, you're going to get the same picture. And that's Corey Seager has deep, bad slumps, right? He's not one of these types that the slumps never get that bad. It's high highs and low lows. Now, he doesn't have a ton of these. He only has about one or two of these a season, but they last a couple of weeks and they're ugly. What we do also know is this one doesn't look any different than the others, which, again, this isn't necessarily as predictive as you'd like it to be, but if you're in the exact same slump I've seen you be in for two or three seasons and the end result is always great, I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to go, this is that time. I'm not going to get too, like, maybe in a shallow enough league, I've got another guy where if I feel like benching Corey Seager against tougher pitchers, I might. But otherwise, you leave him in there knowing that he's going to come out of this. You're not going to want to miss any of that. So I'm all in on Corey Seager. I don't know if I'd call him a buy low. Buying low is weird, because I think he's actually a guy you might be able to get away with it with, you know. You can pay less than market value because people can come up with a narrative, especially because he's had those injuries, like, oh man, maybe it's the injuries. The problem with buying low on Corey Seager is you got two risks. Number one, you've got this mild performance risk. The other one, you've got injury risk. This, just because he already got hurt once doesn't mean he can't get hurt again. Durability is a big problem for Seager. So if you can absorb that kind of durability risk, I think he is a player you can target. Another guy who's maybe not quite as tenured, but just as left-handed as Corey Seager would be Kerry Carpenter. So Kerry Carpenter, I mentioned him a little bit earlier. The strikeout rate's down. Like everything's looking mostly fine. The contact rates are fine. He's just in a bit of a funk. And again, you know, this isn't even like necessarily the worst week of his season, right? Like back towards the end of April, he had like an ugly week or two. I think this turns around. He had an ugly day today. He went 0 for 2 with 2 strikeouts coming off the bench. He's not walking that much this season, which is a mild concern for me. He hasn't really walked at all in the last 2 weeks. I think that'll end up turning around. He's not a guy who walks a lot anyway, but still hitting the ball pretty hard. Still doing all the right things, just can't get the ball to land where it needs to. The strikeout rate, I mean, he's actually not striking out that much at all. So not overly concerned about Kerry Carpenter either. The thing is, when you're a platoon bat exclusively and you're slumping, that's like sort of a double whammy. I already needed you to pretty much do really well every time you played. And now that you're slumping and you're platooned, it makes it so that he falls far. He drops 15 spots, but he's still in the top 75, just barely, but he's still in there. This is still a guy who I think can end the season with 27 to 30 home runs, that kind of thing. And then two other veterans, although they're infielders and they're not at all like those other three guys I talked about, Bryson Stott, Ozzie Albies. So Stott is a guy who really, really up and down in terms of overall performance. It was actually a stretch last season where he was like the best fantasy contributor in all of baseball for like 2.5 weeks. And then he was terrible for like a month after that. High highs, low lows for a guy who doesn't have the profile that would make you think that's what goes on with him, but it just is. You hold on to Stott if you really need the speed, you're in a roto league, or it's just something that you have big weakness there, you need to hold. Second base is very deep, but it's not very strong, right? Like the replacement level is very, like there's a bunch of guys that are all about the same at the replacement level. It's just not very good. So especially in 12 teamers, you might be holding him, especially if he's like your middle infield guy. Ozzie Albies, the one I'm a lot more worried about. Only rank him 2 spots behind, but I don't know what I'm hanging my head on with Ozzie Albies right now. Basically that he used to be good, which is a scary place to be, right? You don't want the only thing to be, oh, well, he used to be good. This isn't one of these things like Seager where it's like, oh, well, we see these slumps every year. The slump has lasted since 2023, right? Like since the end of 2023, he's been a bad hitter, right? Well below average in just about every way. Even if he does exactly what the projections say he'll do, which is like almost twice as good as what he's been doing right now. He ends the season as a very blah 17 or 18 home runs and 13 steals and a 240 average. That's just a dude, right? Like what is that? Like value wise, what is that, Andrés Giménez, right? Like, it's just not that exciting. He feels a lot like replacement level, and I get the feeling I'm going to be dropping him a couple tiers again. So it's a big concern. So, you know, I'm very worried about Ozzie Albies. And then, you know, finally, two other guys who had really nice years last year, and we haven't seen that yet this year. That's going to be Brenton Doyle, Willy Adames. So Doyle, it's hard to be a Rocky because it's a terrible, terrible team. And also, you get that Coors effect, right? So the Coors effect is two ways. In Coors, it's great because pitches move less away from Coors. Every pitch feels like it moves extra. So that's something that's very difficult. He doesn't have a very long track record. Even if you look at the numbers last year, you think he was good all year. That's not the case. He didn't really get good till the second half, right? And then he was like one of the best hitters in all of baseball for like a month and a half, and then kind of fell off the table again. So there's not a ton of track record we're relying on with Doyle anyway. It was more of just like, hey, he's got a lot of power, got a lot of speed. We're hoping the second year is better than the first. Hasn't worked out that way. So in most 10 or 12 teamers, he is replaceable. Willy Adames, if I've still got him, right, I'm holding just for a little longer because he has been hitting a little bit better. And now he's got a new teammate who makes that lineup one spot deeper. So if I did already cut him, I'm not like super beat up about it. But if I have still kept him on my roster, I'm just going to keep an eye on it. And, you know, give it another week. It's not like there's a ton of shortstops waiting for you out there anyway. So you might as well hold on for one more week to see. He's definitely a guy who he dropped 20 this week. He could jump 20 again by Wednesday. If he keeps that hot streak going a little bit, because I want to believe the power is still there. It's just, man, it's just been a very, very slow start. It's not the only slow start he's had, but it's definitely one that, that has caused some concern. So it's, yeah, it's a bunch of vets who are kind of not in a great place right now. The ones, again, the ones I'm most worried of all of them. I think Tatis is going to be okay, showing a few signs. I think Seager's going to be fine. You know, he's had these slumps before. I think Kerry Carpenter is going to be fine. The tools and the skills are all there. Stott, if you don't need him for speed, you probably don't really need him. You probably didn't before either, to be honest. Ozzie Albies, the one I'm most worried about, because it's just, we haven't seen the good Ozzie Albies since 2023. We haven't even really seen any glimpses of it. So that's the one I'm most concerned about. And then Doyle and Adames, guys who, you know, maybe Doyle gives us another hot month and it gets our interest back. Adames, yeah, I mean, very slow start. Maybe he turns it around. But, you know, they've been so bad so far that I don't blame you if you've cut those guys.
Well, Scott, you really ripped through those. We got right back on time. Appreciate your speed and efficiency going through those fallers. Are there any taxi squad guys that you want to talk about before we wrap for the night?
You know, I think the guy that I've been asked the most about is actually not on the taxi squad, and I'll put him on there because people keep asking me about him, and it's Sal Frelick. So Sal Frelick he's hitting leadoff right now for the Brewers. He's hit third for them before. He's in regular baseball. He is a fine, fine player. And to be fair, he has been hitter number 61 so far on this season, right? A big part of that comes from the stolen bases. He's got 14 stolen bases so far this year. The Brewers have been very aggressive on the base paths with him. He only had 18 all of last year. So that's something I should be probably paying a little bit more attention to, is those steals. But other than the steals, Sal Frelick is a guy with a very, very limited power profile. Doesn't hit a lot of fly balls. When he does, he doesn't hit them very hard. This is the highest exit velocity he's ever had in terms, if the season were to end today, and it's 85.4. That's two ticks higher than last year. This is one of the softest hitting players in all of baseball. He has 6 barrels on the season. There's just not a lot here besides he can give you some batting average because the way he slaps the ball around and he's got some speed, but he's just not much more than that. Now, again, he's leading off right now. He just started leading off on Thursday. That makes him a lot more interesting, because if you're fast and you slap the ball around, you want to be leading off. That's where you get the most fantasy value. So he's probably going to make the back end of the list, or maybe the taxi squad in this upcoming edition, assuming he's still batting first by then. But he's a slap hitter with speed who, again, he's had a very strong 2 months, but he's also kind of just like the overall skills just really cap his upside outside of that speed. So if the stolen bases start falling off, it's going to be back to the taxi squad.
One guy you have highlighted in the taxi squad that I'm interested in hearing about is a guy that was extremely hot this past week, and that's Evan Carter down for the Texas Rangers. Carter flashed last year, or not last year, I apologize. He struggled last year after flashing in 2023, kind of in that late stretch into the playoffs, and now he's kind of showing signs of life again after really being out with what most people are considering injury-related poor performance. What do we think about Carter?
I don't really believe in Carter's power. That's the part. Like, I think he's got a pretty good hit tool. He's pretty fast, even though they haven't had him run in the major leagues that much, 10 stolen bases in 89 games. So even when he broke out, you know, I know I had Huth on, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, and we basically said the same thing. Do I believe he can hit for average? Absolutely. Do I believe he can run a little bit? Absolutely. Do I believe he could put up some counting stats for this team? Maybe, depending on how good that offense wants to be. Do I think he could have good plate discipline numbers? You bet. Can he keep walking 10% of the time? Yeah. Can he hit 25 home runs in a season? No, not there. I don't see that in his future. Now, he's done this in some short spurts, but again, this is not a guy who hits the ball terribly hard. This is not a guy who like generally pulls everything. He does hit a lot of fly balls, but basically I think his home run fly ball rate is spiking a little bit. I think it's going to come back down. You know, his opening season, for example, we saw all that power. His home run fly ball rate, his debut in 2023 was 35.7. That's higher than Judge gets, right? What that tells you is he ain't going to keep doing it, right? That's just guys can do this for short periods of time, right? But eventually things go back to where they probably ought to be. And when we saw Evan Carter in, you know, in the higher minors, we saw a home run fly ball rate between like 12 and 15%, maybe like 12 and 18 even, which is half of the home run fly ball rate he showed in that, you know, that stretch. It's 17.4 right now, which again, I think is going to be a little bit high for him. This is what hot Carter looks like. He can whack, you know, he can whack a couple home runs. He can, you know, kind of steal a couple bases. That was pretty cool. I think for the most part, Minnesota just didn't know how to pitch to this guy. And he's going to be more of like a full season. Man, it feels like 16, 17 home runs, maybe 16, 17 stolen bases and decent averages, which again is a good player, but, needs everything to go right. Needs to stay healthy for all that to happen. So for now, he's just a streamer for me. Yeah. Evan Carter, again, stream him, grab him. Like, I'm not saying don't add him. I'm saying you're not penciling in numbers for the rest of the season. You're saying I'm going to ride this while it lasts. And I expect the power to kind of fade away.
Well, that does it for this week of Hacks and Jacks. Thank you again, Scott, for all you do. Let the people know where to find you and your work.
Yeah, you can always find me here at Pitcher List. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, I'll post the top 150 hitters with all the changes, all the notes that I can cram in there. On Fridays, you can find me, and really all weekend, you can find me at the AMA on Reddit. Post comes up between noon and one. We're getting to all the questions that we can. Hopefully pretty soon I'm going to have some help there to really help, especially with the pitcher stuff, so I don't have to just go back and research all the stuff Nick has said and give that to people. I do have some of my own opinions on pitchers, but not that many. So hopefully I get a little bit more help there. Same with prospects. But yeah, those are the two main places you can find me. Of course, you can find me on the artist formerly known as Twitter at If The Chew Fits. You can find me on Blue Sky, scottchew.pitcherlist.com. Gotten a little bit better about posting. I finally got an app where I can post to both at the same time, so I don't have to remember to bounce between them. And like, for some reason, that was a mental block for me. It's like, oh, I got to do it twice. Like, no, I can just do it once and it goes out. So that'll help a lot. So that's a fun one. But yeah, I hope you guys, I know, I think I mentioned this. I don't remember if I mentioned this last week or not. We don't have comments on the site anymore, but I'm still just as available to all of you. Please feel free to reach out, message, find me on Reddit, Chusif Esquire. You can find me again, X. You can find me on Blue Sky. I'm more than happy to talk about an article. You can tell me what you don't like. Tell me what you like. Ask questions. I'm here for you. Just reach out. And of course, on the Discord, I'm always very active in our Discord. So if you haven't joined, please strongly consider it. You get a lot of great content from us there. Lot of back and forth. And again, another great place to reach out to me.
Well, thanks, Scott. And again, happy Father's Day to you. Happy Father's Day to my dad, my grandfather, my father-in-law, my grandfather-in-law, all the dads in my life. Happy Father's Day. And to all the dads out there in Pitcherless family, happy Father's Day. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope you enjoy a great week of baseball. This has been Hacks and Jacks. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next week. See you later.